This episode is from a series of talks recorded at Te Pātakatoi Adam Art Gallery, titled Through a Contemporary Lens, Artists in Response. The series featured Te Opoko o Te Ika a Māori-based artists who were invited to share their response to the exhibition A Different Light, first photographs of Aotearoa. In this episode, we hear artist and educator Matt Tinney responding to an image of an unidentified wahine attributed to the American Photographic Company and a photograph of King Taowhio by Elizabeth Pullman. As you listen, you can look at the photograph mentioned in this episode by following the link to the Adam Art Gallery website.
Kia ora tātou, ko Matt Tinney tōku ingoa no Waikato, Ngāti Mahuta, Ngāti Tipa, Ngāti Rā Kaipaka, me Ngāti Kahungunu whānui aho. First of all, I'd just like to acknowledge Te Kāhui Ariki, Kuini Ngā Waihonoi Te Pō, Pōtatau Te Whirofru, Tai Mai Noa Ki Te Kāhui Ariki, Pai Marire Ki A Rātou. I'd also like to acknowledge those who have passed on. We are in a space with many of these people who have passed on, so there's quite a level of tapu in this room, and it's had me thinking this whole morning about how we think about ancestors and those who have passed on. And so I'd like to acknowledge those in this room, Kingi Tawhiao on the wall there, as well as those who have passed more recently, Robin Kahukiwa, who passed away in the last week. So I'd like to acknowledge her as well. And all the influences that they've had on many of us today, artists, but also in Te Ao Māori. Also like to acknowledge mana whenua as well, Taranaki Whānui, Te Ao Te Ao, and also Te Pātakatoi, the Adam Art Gallery, for inviting me along to speak, and Caroline as well, a colleague of mine, who also asked me what kind of linked this up to happen. So it's nice to be here with you. Thanks for coming along. I think, first of all, I just want to say I don't know who this wahine is. So if anyone was like, oh, Matt's going to tell us who it is, I can't do that. but the reason I was drawn to talk about this image was because her name isn't a her in this collection. And it really got me thinking about the really complex relationship that Māori and many Indigenous peoples have with photography and with the lens. And so I think I just kind of want to start off a little bit talking about the history of the lens with Māori. And what I'm going to share is like not anything new, so you might already know like a lot of it. But it's kind of these histories that really helped me think about my art practice. I'm a lens-based practitioner, but it was a real struggle and journey to like work with the lens. I think of my journey as like a lot of grappling with it and struggling, because technologically I was like really bad with photography when I started. And even now I'm still like, I don't really know what I'm doing. But what compelled me to take up and to discontinue like other types of art, or to not use other types of art making that I was doing before, was because of these histories that tangata whenua have with photography and with the lens. So looking at these images, like the one of this unidentified wahine, and amongst these other portraits as well, I think it's really, there's a lot of sadness. I think the way that this woman was framed by the photographers as a celebrity, and then her image dispersed widely amongst people as something of a like exotic image, or something to kind of like ogle at and be like, wow, so fascinating. And I think at first there's this element of objectivity in that, and I think it's something that you can connect to other art critiques like John Berger, who talks about ways of seeing and the objectification of the human body, and he talks a lot about it in the context of the female body and the male gaze. But in this context, we see the objectification of Indigenous people at the colonial gaze. And I think that's evidenced through the way that we don't know this wahine's name. And so who she was as a person was much less important than this idea that it fed of a colonial imagination. And so that's kind of the first reason why I wanted to speak to that, was to, I guess, give mana to this wahine and acknowledge her personhood and to recognize that this is not just a photograph of her, but it is her. And for Māori, the image of an ancestor is the ancestor, or the image of a person is that person, which I'll get to in a little bit. So I think another interesting aspect of these photographs is how they feed into the colonial gaze. And so the focus is more on who is taking the photo and then who it's being dispersed to and who is viewing it rather than who was in the photo. And I think that's unfortunately just like a big part of the early history of photography. Even in the language that we use for photographs, like to take a photo and to capture a photo, they're very objectifying. It's very objectifying language and doesn't acknowledge the personhood of not just people, but also land. For Māori and a lot of Indigenous people, land does have personhood as well. Like we refer to the whenua as Papa Tuanuku, who is our earth mother. And so photography has that history. And I don't think that's to say that that's what photography is. I think, which I'll get to in a bit as well, there's many ways that we can reframe the way we think about photography and the processes and the language. But at the time, that was a big part of it being used as a colonizing tool. And there's like Suzanne Sontag, who talks about the camera as a gun and those types of violences that she added to it. I think it's interesting that that photograph is positioned with those other three around it, especially the two up top of Kingi Tawhia. And the reason I think that's really interesting is because the bottom one is an unidentified wahine who was created as a Māori celebrity, even though her name is not known, which is quite ironic. And then you have positioned above her Kingi Tawhia, who I guess in that same type of thinking could be considered a Māori celebrity because his name's very well known, the second Māori king. But I think the other interesting thing is that we have a woman who's, it's unknown the circumstances in which her photo was taken. It seems likely that it wasn't super consensual. I'm sure there would have been maybe some elements of that. And just on that note, I think it's, for me, it's really important to, even though I've been talking about like the way that photography has been weaponized as a tool of colonialism, whether that's intentional or not, I think it's also important to not let that be a single narrative, which I think removes the agency of sitters. And so for this wahine, I like to imagine at least some level of agency for her rather than her being forced against her will, because I find that kind of hard to believe. Possible, but I don't know. But I also just like to think that her mana, that there was some agency or some assertion of that mana. And it's definitely there still in this photograph. But coming back to Tawhia, I think what's interesting in the positioning of these photos is that Tawhia was known to like go to multiple photographers and request his photograph. Like Elizabeth Pullman was one that he frequently visited. And then he had his paintings done as well. Like there's Gottfried Lindauer who painted his portrait. And then there's evidence of Tawhia gifting some of his taonga to certain photographers. I believe the Foy brothers, I think, were gifted a mere by King Tawhia. And so I think those are really important things to know because they disrupt the singular narrative that photography was solely a harmful device weaponized against Māori. I think there's a lot of complexity in that. And so for me, that's where my interest in photography came, is all of that complexity. I'm a person who really loves complicated things, and I get really bored when it's just like binary, good, bad, black, white. The moment things get a bit messy, I'm right in there. And so that became so fascinating to me. And a lot of the carte de visites, which are those like little small prints in this room, I think they're so fascinating how they became like passed around almost like trading cards. And I kind of think about like the Weet-Bix boxes with the rugby trading cards in them. And they had that same kind of like peculiarity to me. But I think what's mostly is the way that nowadays a lot of people, we tend to think of these images as snapshots of reality in the past, like a historical reality. But looking at a lot of these studio photographers, particularly when they have Māori sitters who are dressed up in kākahu and wearing taonga, a lot of times those taonga and kākahu didn't belong to the sitters, they belonged to the studios. And so that evidences the ways that studios and photographers want to talk about Māori rather than the ways that Māori would talk about themselves. Because at that time it was well known that Māori had adopted Victorian era clothing, and it was kind of a day-to-day thing. So I became really fascinated by that and the idea of how these photographs are constructed rather than real lived experiences of day-to-day people. What I really appreciate about this whole show is like we've got works here that really clearly betray the constructed nature of photography. Because like I was saying, a lot of people think of photography as much more real than other types of media. Like we've got here this painting of a photograph, and people kind of think of painting as less real because, which I don't really know why, but we just do. And the photograph therefore is more real, but the photograph is equally constructed and not real. Yeah, I think that's really clear when you see the ways that the image of tangata whenua have been constructed in these photographs. And that's, I think it's complex again, because in some ways you do have some sitters who will bring their own tonga and wear those things because that's how they want to represent themselves. But in a lot of ways, it, like I said before, it serves the interests of the photographers and the interests of a colonial gaze, which wants to see something different and something other. And there's many reasons for that, which I'm not going to get into. I think coming back to this idea of agency and not relying on singular narratives, I think that's where this idea of, or this action of claiming and reclaiming becomes really powerful. Like I was saying before, for Māori, the image of an ancestor is the ancestor. And so even though there were instances of probably not very ethical photographic practices, like I was saying with Kingi Tawhia, there were instances of relationships that were happening where photographs were commissioned. And even in the situations where they weren't, how people claim those photographs, because they're our ancestors. And so I think it brings up this really interesting concept of what within a Western framework we might call like ownership or maybe like protection. But in Te Ao Māori, we'd probably use the word kaitiakitanga or manaakitanga, thinking about care and how we care for these people, these ancestors. And so in our whare, if you've ever been inside of a whare tupuna, an ancestral house, often you'll see a lot of carvings of ancestors. And so I think photography became another visual representation of ancestors, similar to carving. It's just a different representation, different likeness of those people. And so nowadays, more often than not, you'll see a lot of photographs of ancestors on the walls. And so looking at these images always takes me back to thinking about those images in our whare. And my whānau, we're a kingitanga whānau. So our whānau, we support the kingitanga in Waikato and Turanga Waiwai Marae, which is the home of the kingitanga. That's our marae. And so you'll see photos of the kingitanga in those different, in the different whare at Suranga Waiwai Marae. And so even though photography has these not great histories, it also has allowed for us to keep our ancestors with us in a different way. And so nowadays, very often when you go to Tangihanga, you'll see Māori, we call it kawe mate, which is like carrying your ancestors. And so you'll see them carrying photographs. For my whānau, my dad away just over a year ago. And for Māori, that the year after the passing of someone, the whānau, we think of the whānau as the whānau pani, or the grieving family. And so for a whole year, we carry that weight of grieving and mourning with us. And part of that process as well is, it's one that's kind of come from older times when, you know, before like telephone or radio even, where nowadays we can just call someone up and let someone know that someone has passed. But before those times, you'd have to travel physically and let people know they're passed. And we kind of carry an aspect of that tradition on today, where we will go to different marae, and everyone will already know at that marae that someone has passed away, but we'll bring their photos with us anyway to bring that person with us physically. Because as I said before, the image of the ancestor is the ancestor. And so that was something we did with my grandmother, where we carried her photograph to different marae that she has whakapapa connections to. And when we were doing that, there were many others who had loved ones that they were bringing with them onto these marae. And so I think those stories are really powerful in activating the mana and the mauri and the hau of these people that have been carried by their loved ones. And so we're thinking about their life, their mauri, their essence, where even though their physical being has passed on, or, you know, is in the earth or wherever it is, they're still with us in these photographs and these images. And on that note as well, even when the photographs aren't visible, there are many instances where, like, photographs have degraded or they've been lost to natural disasters or whatever. The corridor and the memory still keeps them alive as well. And so they're never truly lost to us. They're just in a place that we can't see. One thing I wanted to kind of focus this talk around is not just the histories of photography with tangata whenua, but also the present ways that tangata whenua engage with photography and possible, like, ideas for the future. And so, like I was saying before, how Māori were claiming these images in our whare tupuna and in our cultural customs and procedures, there are a lot of artists and photographers who also engage with photography in a way that disrupts the colonial aspects of it, its colonial legacies, and indigenizes. There's a term, moldifying, like to make Māori. No, I can't remember who coined that phrase. But it's this process that was once used in ways that weren't solely to uplift our mana. They've been disrupted. And so some things I'm thinking about is the work of Merata Mita, the filmmaker who did a lot of work to decolonize the lens. Her son made a documentary film about that, decolonizing the screen. And then she has a beautiful essay, The Soul of the Image, which talks about the mana and the Māori and the ho, and the ways that Māori have claimed and reclaimed our ancestors' images. And I think, interestingly, in relationship to Suzanne Sontag's idea of the camera as a gun, you have Barry Barclay, another filmmaker who thinks of the camera as a friend. And he talks about ways that he has worked with filmmaking and with the camera to make it less obtrusive and less intrusive and harmful, and allow for it to work for Māori. And that's simple things like distance, so it's not right in your face, and things like that. There's also, I think it's interesting that the show's still running, because at the moment, the National Library City Gallery has a show that's showing Jit Rewiti and Connor Clark's photographs, and really beautiful photographs there, which are photographs of landscapes that were taken. So she's speaking back to the colonial history of landscape, which I think is really relevant to the way that we think about photographs of humans from a Te Ao Māori perspective, because for Māori, there's not as much divide between humans and the more than human as there is within other ways of thinking, such as Western frameworks. Because, like I said at the beginning of this corridor, we think about land as having personhood as well. And I think Bridget's work is really interesting because she, I'd recommend seeing it if you haven't seen it already. What she does is she paints over these black and white images with fennel. So taking the pigments from the earth and then colouring them. And in a way, it's not just giving colour to these images, but it also mediates the gaze that we view the landscape through. So we can't view the landscape without... I feel like my word's going to get a bit muddled here, because this word gets like a bit meta. We're like, you are viewing the landscape through an image of the landscape, but the landscape is in between that. So like, you're actually looking at the literal landscape, because that earth pigment has been collected from the locations of the photographs she's taken. So I think that's one way. Another way that the lens is being decolonized and indigenized is through that mediation of how do we engage with it. And I think it's a big part of that is disrupting the colonial gaze. I think one way is by evoking these histories and understanding that a lot of these images are constructs, and, you know, understanding the tropes that are being represented in them and that are being dispersed, the ideas of like an old time Māori, or, you know, relics of a dying race, which were super common at that time. But rather recognizing that Māori are part of a continuum, and, you know, we just as readily accepted the lens and photography as any other tool that we engaged. Yeah, so there's Bridget's work. Oh, another, I think, who does some really great work with decolonizing the lens is Nova Paul, who's another filmmaker. And she has these beautiful works where she makes images of rākau with film processes, and then to develop the film, she uses a developer that she's made from collecting the rākau, so the leaves and the sticks, and she will use that to make a chemical developer to develop the film. And so in that way, the Darko is making its own image, which I think is really incredible, rather than just the human taking photos of something and objectifying it. The more than human becomes part of that process of developing its image. And so for me, I think that connects to the idea of rangatiratanga, or having the idea of self-representation, being able to represent your image in your own way. And I'm not going to talk like about my art practice too much, but that's kind of the histories that led me to doing what I do, which is mostly at the moment self-portrait photography. And that's because I'm thinking about rangatiratanga and how a tangata whenua person represents themselves rather than someone else representing tangata whenua. Yeah, and so I think there's many different ways at the moment where people are disrupting the vernacular of the lens, the colonial vernacular. I think even just the literal vocabulary we use, like instead of taking and capturing photos, making images instead, rethinking, you know, what is portraiture, what is a person, who is a person, rethinking the processes of engagement, like being more collaborative, things like that. And so I guess thinking for like a future sense of photography, this is where I need my notes, because I did write down some questions. I was telling Caroline and Kate before that I always have questions. And so I think ultimately what, like, one of my primary questions is just thinking about whose gaze is this for? So like thinking about who's looking. And that's looking in the process of making a photo, but also when that photo is presented to people, where does that go? How is that framed? And thinking about, once again, rangatiratanga and kaitiakitanga and manaakitanga, who do these images, who are they presented to? Who's going to engage with them and how will they do so? I think it's quite challenging in spaces like this because as like public institutions, which are open to the public, it's a lot trickier to guide people in the way that they engage with these photos. And that's why I wanted to acknowledge the tapu of this space at the beginning. And when you come down, there's the why that is there, you know, as a way to cleanse tapu. So those are some indicators. But I think those are questions that are in conversations that still need to take place. And I think about like these people who keeps their modi alive. And how are their stories being presented? Things like that. Yeah, I'm really hopeful for the future of photography, like I was tangata whenua photographers and artists, and then other Indigenous artists. But I think there's also a lot of space for non-Māori Pākehā tauiwi in this process of decolonizing the lens. And this morning when I was on my way here, I was reminded of the Australian artist Justin Varga, who... I wouldn't say she's necessarily decolonizing the lens because I don't think that's her focus. However, I do see it having crossovers because her work, if you're unfamiliar with it, is, some of the works that she does is she uses photographic film, and then rather than putting that into a camera and then making the image that way, she will make marks on the film. And so she has one really beautiful work where she made it with her grandmother, and her grandmother made marks on it, drew on it, scratched it, also licked it and put her saliva into it. And then Justine took those film papers and then processed them in like kind of conventional photographic ways to then develop them into these beautiful large images that she's colored through different photographic processes. And she's framed them as portraits of her grandmother, which I think is really beautiful and speaks to Meratamita's idea of the soul of the image in those makings of those marks and like physically imprinting the photographic paper. I feel like that has imparted the essence of Justine's grandmother into those photographs. So I think that's another thing is, you know, extending what is a portrait and, you know, what is the essence of a person beyond just the visual representation. And like I said, I wouldn't say her work is necessarily decolonizing because she might not be actively doing that, but I think it is still doing that because the work of decolonization is not just for the colonized, but it's for everyone to participate in. But yeah, these are just like a lot of the thoughts that I have when looking at these images, and they've been really influential in my practice. And like I said, I'm really mindful to not get stuck on singulars of bad photographer, good subject, but rather acknowledge the complexities. And there's so many things we just don't know about these images, particularly the relationships between the sitters and the photographers and the photography studios. And I think in that unknowingness is space for us to imagine. And I might be like a bit naive and overly optimistic, but I like to imagine really nice things happening in that, because I don't like to get trapped in these really negative thoughts. Likewise, how I like to imagine hopeful, vibrant, just futures, I also like to imagine moments of that were still existing in the past, even when there might have been a larger influence that wasn't doing those things. But yeah, that's all from me, Ngā mihi koutou.